37 years, I try to get this passed. It proves one thing: perseverance overcomes intelligence any day of the year.
Alaska's delegation celebrates as Congress passes legislation opening ANWR to oil development. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, December 20th. Good evening. I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, will oil companies even be interested in ANWR?
So if the Trump administration tries to rubber stamp oil decisions or take shortcuts, we won't hesitate to go to court.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
Alaska's congressional delegation celebrated their success today in opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling. The measure passed in the Republican tax bill with a final vote in the House this afternoon. As Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports, President Trump also applauded a victory that was 37 years in the making.
Lower tax rates. For a couple who makes between $19,000 and $77,000...
Little of the congressional debate was about the refuge. For hours at a time, no one mentioned it. But the refuge got big play on the south lawn of the White House.
And ANWR, so a friend of mine, congratulations. And Dan, where's Dan?
At the presidential mic, Congressman Don Young took the long view.
37 years I try to get this passed. It proves one thing: perseverance overcomes intelligence any day of the year.
Young was happy after the vote, but not over the moon, greatest day of his 44 years in Congress happy. Instead, he seemed measured.
I think the pipeline probably was a bigger issue, and this is a follow-up one. This is big because I worked on it, you know, ever since we had the Alaska National Lands Act.
ANILCA. Here's the 22nd version of that law. The 1980 Alaska Lands Act established the Arctic Refuge, but lawmakers couldn't agree what to do with the far north part, the coastal plain, allow oil development or preserve it for wildlife. So they punted. In Section 1002 of the law, Congress said the coastal part would be studied and they'd decide what to do with it later.
We finally got it done.
Young says the ANWR victory is long overdue because he says he had the support of two of the biggest conservationists in the House back in 1980.
What bothers me about the campaign against it all these years was that two of the leading environmentalists signed the conference report to set 1002 areas aside, Bo Udall and John Seiberling.
The late Senator Ted Stevens used to say something similar. Stevens claimed he actually won the fight to open the coastal plain back in 1980 because he got promises from Democratic Senators Paul Tsongas and Scoop Jackson. But whatever commitments the Alaskans got, they didn't get them in law. Until now. Senator Lisa Murkowski said as she left the Capitol in the wee hours after the Senate vote, she called her dad, former Senator Frank Murkowski.
But he did say, you know, you did something that I couldn't do and Ted couldn't do, so good for you. One of these days you're gonna make something of yourself.
Environmental groups vow to continue to fight for the refuge in court, in corporate boardrooms, and in Congress. Senator Dan Sullivan says he's happy to be part of the team that finally got the refuge drilling bill through Congress. And Sullivan says he's happy about the tax changes that passed, too.
You know, a lot of people are losing or not getting a full permanent fund dividend. A lot of them are going to see, particularly the middle class, a tax reduction that's going to fill that hole. Significant.
The Nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation says the bill will add $1.5 trillion to the deficit, or $1 trillion when you factor in economic growth. But Sullivan and Murkowski say the hit to the deficit won't be that large because the economy will grow more than the Joint Committee predicts. And they say jobs from development in ANWR will help. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Even Senator Murkowski acknowledges it will probably be at least a decade before oil production in Anwar begins. One of the big questions is which oil companies, if any, are actually interested in drilling there. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk tried to find out what companies might be thinking.
When it comes to the Arctic Refuge, Alaska's top three oil companies are keeping their cards hidden. ExxonMobil declined to comment for this story. ConocoPhillips was noncommittal, saying in a statement it will, quote, consider it against other opportunities in our portfolio, unquote. BP referred me to an industry lobbying group, the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. And Alaska Oil and Gas Association President Kara Moriarty says she has no idea which companies might bid on leases in the Arctic Refuge.
They don't talk about, you know, whether they're participating in a lease sale or not because it's a highly competitive industry.
That said, there are clues that oil companies are pretty curious about the 1002 area, the 1.5 million acre section of the Arctic Refuge Congress just opened up for development. David Hausnecht with the U.S. Geological Survey is an expert on Alaska's oil resources, and lately, he's been getting a lot of calls.
I've been contacted by companies as far away as Australia.
Hausnecht says oil companies started asking him for information on the 1002 area's oil potential when Senator Lisa Murkowski's measure began moving through Congress. He says there are good reasons for oil companies to be asking questions. The data on how much oil is actually in the Arctic Refuge is limited but intriguing. USGS thinks there might be between about 4 and about 12 billion barrels of oil in the 1002 area. Huge numbers. And that huge potential lies onshore, in a politically stable country. Those are big pluses for oil companies. Hausnecht says there's not many other places on the planet like that.
Those combinations are quite unique when you look around the world for areas where there may be a billion barrel opportunities for discovery.
But there are some big uncertainties, like cold hard economics. Wood Mackenzie analyst Cody Rice says thanks to improved technologies like hydraulic fracturing, oil developments in the lower 48 are often cheaper to pursue than projects in Arctic Alaska.
It's clear Alaska needs more development. It's not as clear to me that oil companies need big, complicated Arctic projects right now when you can see billions of barrels and resource being added on an annual basis in West Texas.
That's not the only likely hurdle. It's a safe bet that environmental groups are going to keep fighting oil development in the refuge any way they can, including in court. Eric Graffy is an attorney with Earth Justice. He says Congress may have changed one law about drilling in the refuge, but all other environmental laws haven't gone away.
So if the Trump administration tries to rubber stamp oil decisions or take shortcuts, we won't hesitate to go to court to enforce these environmental laws.
But Moriarty of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association says dealing with environmental opposition is just part of the job for oil companies.
Alaska has been the poster child for litigation cases for any type of development on the North Slope. And so I think companies sort of factor that in the timing and unfortunately in budgets to have to plan for that now.
Moriarty may be in the dark about which oil companies are actually interested in drilling in the refuge, but just as environmental groups couldn't stop Congress from allowing oil development in the refuge, she's doubtful that opposition will be able to stop that development from actually happening either. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Anchorage Fire Department pays out hundreds of thousands after losing a discrimination lawsuit.
It's really about the old boys club that is the Anchorage Fire Department. It's over 90% white men, and they can pick and choose who they want to pick and choose.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Earlier this month, the Anchorage Assembly voted on a measure designed to curb illegal camping in cities' parks and wooded areas. The move reduces the number of days people have to vacate a camp from 15 to 10. On Tuesday, the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska said it will not take the city to court over the move, at least not yet. In a statement, the organization's executive director, Joshua Decker, criticized the new measure as short-sighted for focusing more on criminalizing poverty than finding solutions to homelessness. But Decker also says that given actions by the Berkowitz administration and the city's assembly, meaningful progress is being made to address the problem, including connecting more people with support resources and housing. The ACLU of Alaska says that while it believes the new rule might not be totally legal, it won't initiate a court challenge, provided local officials maintain high targets for combating homelessness in the coming year. Anchorage has paid one of its firefighters more than $750,000 after his successful lawsuit against the fire department. It's the second large civil award this year the city has paid to public safety employees after a pair of police officers won $2.7 million this summer in a lawsuit over racial discrimination. But as Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove explains, the firefighters' lawsuit started as another discrimination allegation and ended with a jury verdict for breach of contract.
Jeff Graham's lawsuit alleged he had been passed over for a promotion to be an engineer because of his race and age. Graham is Korean American and in his 50s. He's been a mechanic and firefighter with the Anchorage Fire Department for more than 20 years. Through his attorney, Jeff Jarvie, Graham says he tested well on the first two exams. But there's a more subjective oral exam that Graham failed, and he says that was because the testers were biased against him. Here's Jarvie.
It's really about the old boys club that is the Anchorage Fire Department. It's over 90% white men, and they can pick and choose who they want to pick and choose, regardless of whether they're the most qualified person for the job.
The first tests were in 2012. Graham filed the lawsuit in 2015, and it went to trial this past summer. Jarvie says he was not allowed to present some evidence of discrimination, and that resulted in the case becoming largely about problems with how Graham was treated in general.
We wish they'd been able to hear the whole case for sure, because we think there are some broader and more important issues out there other than just a simple breach of contract.
In October, the jury returned a verdict that said Graham had been treated unfairly, but they decided it was not the result of racial discrimination. A judge awarded Graham nearly $780,000 in November. Both sides are still haggling over attorney's fees, but the city says it will not appeal. Jarvie says the lawsuit wasn't just about money, that Graham wanted to see changes in how the fire department tests and promotes its employees. And while the department uses a different testing format than in 2012, Jarvie says it doesn't appear as though they've made significant changes. Jody Hetrick is deputy chief of operations at the fire department. She says the jury did not offer specifics on what to change.
It was a little frustrating for our side not to know exactly what they felt that we did wrong, because we want to treat our employees fairly and equally and make sure that they don't feel the department is doing something wrong. We want to fix things. It's just hard to do that when you don't have all the details.
Hetrick says the oral exams are very similar to a job interview for any employer, and the fire department uses a scoring system for each question. Hetrick rejects Jarvie's accusation that the testers are simply picking the people they like the most, rather than those best prepared to do the job.
We're a professional organization. We are not a good old boys club, and this is an emergency services environment. You know, we have to have people who the first day they show up to sit in that seat, that may be the worst fire that we have within the history of the municipality. So we have to make sure that they are 100% qualified to do that work.
Hetrick also says the testers are required to divulge any conflicts of interest, including whether the person taking the test is a friend or family member, and they sometimes have to step aside. Meantime, Graham continues to work at the fire department, and Jarvie, his attorney, says he plans to stay there until retirement. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
Governor Bill Walker's new budget fills a gap that could have shut the ferry system down for much of the spring. The spending plan, released on Friday, also funds the full Alaska Marine Highway schedule for the next fiscal year. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
A complex provision in this fiscal year's budget cut about a fifth of the Marine Highway's funding. If the money isn't replaced, General Manager John Falvey says ships will stop sailing.
We feel we can operate the ferry system until approximately the middle of April 2018. Then we would, in essence, have to shut the system down.
Until the next budget year?
Yes.
That begins July 1st, so all ferries would be tied up for about 2.5 months. But there's a remedy in the Walker administration's budget. It restores the funds, about $24 million, and that would allow the ferry system to continue serving its 35 port communities if it remains in the spending plan.
I would think the legislature will support it.
Sitka Senator Bert Stedman chairs his chamber's transportation committee. He says he expects opposition, but so far, finance committee leaders haven't disapproved.
The co-chairs have been notified over a month ago that, you know, by letter that this was coming, and if they didn't agree to it, to let the administration know. As far as I know, there was no objections to it.
The money is in what's called the supplemental budget. It includes appropriations that fill gaps in this fiscal year, which ends June 30th. Funding for the fiscal year starting July 1st is listed in the operating budget. Walker's version of that proposes a small drop in ferry system funding, less than 1%. But Falvey says service will increase slightly because some ships are cheaper to sail than others.
We'll run the Columbia a little bit less and the Malaspina a little bit more. So we, because of the ship configuration that we have this year, with even a little less money, going to be able to run a few more weeks of service.
Next year's Marine Highway budget is just under $140 million. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
ACPE's Education Loan Refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
This month, Illisagvik College in Utqiagvik announced it'll waive tuition for all Alaska Native students starting next semester. Ravenna Koenig of Alaska's Energy Desk reports.
Illisagvik College is currently the only federally recognized tribal college in Alaska. The school offers associate degrees, vocational certificates, and short-term workforce development courses, plus a bachelor's degree in business administration that they just launched this fall. Of the 700 or so students enrolled in the college each semester, a large proportion are non-native. In fact, among tribal colleges and universities, Illisagvik has one of the highest non-native enrollments.
We hover between about 55 to 60% Alaska Native students currently, and we are certainly hoping that those numbers are going to grow with this waiver.
Pearl Brower is the president of Illisagvik College. She says students have expressed concern with the full-time tuition, which runs over $3,000. This is especially hard for distance education students who take classes from rural places where there aren't a lot of high-paying jobs.
More and more, we were hearing that funding was a barrier, that they were trying to figure out, you know, how to go to college when this kind of looming monetary amount was in front of them.
The school is planning to cover the cost of the waiver internally, although the price will be defrayed by the Bureau of Indian Education, which gives Illisagvik money for each full-time course load taken by an Alaska Native or American Indian student. Brower says that the ultimate goal of the waiver program is to encourage more Alaska Native students to finish their associate degree and go on to get their bachelor's. She hopes that that will translate to more hiring of Alaska Natives in positions that require those degrees, especially in rural schools and businesses across the state. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Ravenna Koenig in Fairbanks.
Would you jump in an ice-cold lake for a good cause? Last Saturday, over 1,000 people plunged into Goose Lake in Anchorage for the Alaska Special Olympics. The event raised around $300,000 to support the team that will be going to the USA Games in Seattle next July. Alaska Public Media's Samantha Davenport has more.
Hundreds of people gathered around Goose Lake to
to watch participants plunge into the freezing waters. Some plungers cried, some belly flopped, and some couldn't wait to get it over with. Plungers jumped in teams of four into the pool of water. Firefighters went out the day before to cut a square of ice out of the lake. I caught one participant as he raced to the warming area after the jump. He was in such a hurry, he didn't have time to tell me his name.
It was really exciting and invigorating. It's fun to come out here and help raise some money, have a good time.
The plunge is the biggest fundraiser of the year for Special Olympics Alaska. It's raised $2.5 million since the first event in 2009. Jim Billamacy is the president and CEO of the organization. He first became involved with Special Olympics in 1979 when he saw an ad in the paper to volunteer for the Olympics in Kodiak. He's been with Special Olympics ever since. Billamacy thinks that people with intellectual disabilities can learn confidence and skills through sports.
The beauty of it is sometimes jumping into cold water and maybe that second of loneliness, that second of feeling sorry for yourself and maybe not feeling a part of things, that for that 1 second, that's sometimes what our athletes feel day in and day out. And so when we break down those barriers from both our athletes and our participants, that's what I look forward to the most.
Athletes help in other ways besides plunging, like going to schools, taking pledges, and informing the community about the event. Aisha Abdul-Jalil has been working for Special Olympics Alaska for 11 years and is an athlete herself. She was at the event on Saturday, giving towels to cold plungers. She says that she's too cool to plunge, but still cheers on everyone daring to jump.
My favorite thing about the polar plunge is seeing everybody with their smiles and in their costumes and jumping in the cold water.
Special Olympics Alaska athletes train in 14 sports throughout the year. In Anchorage, I'm Samantha Davenport.
Working parents looking for childcare in Juneau can find themselves without many options. And like a lot of other things in Alaska, it is expensive, sometimes over $1,000 a month. KTOO's David Purdy found out more about the impacts the lack of childcare can have on a community.
Tristan Ridgway is an energetic 9-year-old who likes building things and telling stories.
And then he was here to look for a hero, and then they were battling.
It hasn't always been easy for his mom, Chloe Abbott, to find a childcare environment that's a good fit for him.
And then everybody cheered.
She was building a career with the state 2.5 years ago when she was confronted with an unexpected decision.
He said he was getting hurt at daycare by one of the providers.
She filed a complaint with the state, and the daycare center shut down a few months later, citing financial reasons. When Abbott went to look for new daycare, she found only one option, and that provider spoke almost exclusively Spanish. She didn't feel comfortable with the language barrier, so she left her career and found a job where she could bring her son along, cleaning apartments during the week and as a server on the weekends.
And still that didn't make up for the break I took in pay, even between those two part-time jobs.
Without other options for childcare, Abbott's work and finances took a hit. Many parents face this dilemma in a city with more kids than childcare. Even when childcare is available, it's not necessarily affordable.
Parents are faced with this dilemma of, well, I can get a job, but it'll cost me almost all my earnings to pay for childcare for my child. So I stay out of the workforce.
Brian Holst is the president of the Juneau Economic Development Council and also sits on the school board. So he thinks a lot about the impact of education on the economy.
There's work for people to take if we had opportunities for them to enter the workforce.
Holst says making childcare available to more parents could help fill lower paid jobs and make Juneau more attractive to workers with in-demand skills. Recently, there have been a few efforts to boost childcare in Juneau. In 2015, the Assembly voted to relax zoning rules to make it easier to start in-home childcare facilities in residential neighborhoods. and there are training and startup resources for new providers. But in the end, like any business, it comes down to money. One reason the city doesn't have enough childcare is that providers are getting squeezed financially as well.
It's not an easy business to run.
Gwenny Make has owned ABC Center in Juneau for 25 years. Like most providers, she says she could probably charge more, but she's reluctant to raise prices when she thinks about the families who rely on her.
And I think that's my downfall as a businesswoman is I go with my own emotion a lot of time when I do the rate. I do not go with the market rate.
But prices that are too low can ultimately mean fewer slots for kids that need them. Many childcare centers lack the income to expand, and some aren't even able to cover their costs and end up closing altogether.
We definitely need a lot more childcare available in the city so that, you know, people can work and they can be productive in our community.
Chloe Abbott never did find childcare for her son. She stuck it out until he was in school full time and able to be a little more independent.
Now that he is old enough to spend a little bit of time on his own, I can still work full time, but it took quite a while for us to get where we're at right now and me to get back into the career I want to be in.
Earlier this year, a volunteer group lobbied the Juneau Assembly to spend sales tax money to subsidize early childhood education. But that proposal lost out to a host of infrastructure and maintenance projects. In Juneau, I'm David Purdy.
And that story is part of Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity in America, an ongoing public media reporting initiative. That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. Weird reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Harbaugh, Samantha Davenport, and Casey Grove in Anchorage, Ed Schoenfeld and David Purdy in Juneau, and Ravenna Koenig in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, whose goal is safe and responsible operations of the Point Thompson facility. ExxonMobil, energy lives here. The University of Alaska's founders knew that to build a great state, we would need a great university. Today, UA offers more than 400 degrees and certificates with campuses from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. They are leaders in Arctic and Alaska research and dedicated to direct hands-on teaching, whether online, in the classroom, or in the field. Greatness awaits you. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve at alaska.edu/starthere. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.